In the 31st millennium, humanity stands at its zenith. The immortal emperor of mankind leads the Great Crusade, a massive military campaign to reunite scattered human colonies across the stars. After millennia of isolation during the Age of Strife, mankind reclaims its cosmic birthright through conquest and diplomacy. The emperor's vision is grand, yet contradictory. Unite humanity by force while eliminating all religion and superstition in favor of pure rationalism, the imperial truth. At the forefront of this expansion are the Space Marines, genetically enhanced super soldiers organized into legions, each led by a Primarch, the Emperor's superhuman sons. These warriors are marvels of genetic engineering, 8 feet tall, capable of spitting acid, breathing in vacuum, and surviving wounds that would kill dozens of normal humans. Their massive fleets darken the skies of rebellious worlds, while their fortress monasteries rise like mountains on conquered planets. Among the Primarchs, none shines brighter than Horus Lupercal, the Emperor's first found son. His Luna Wolves exemplify swift, decisive warfare with their motto, "Strike fast, strike hard, strike down all resistance." When the Emperor names Horus Warmaster and returns to Terra, it seems the natural culmination of countless victories. Yet beneath this golden veneer lie philosophical contradictions that will eventually tear the Imperium apart. At the heart of the Luna Wolves stands the Mournival, four captains serving as Horus's closest advisors. Ezekiel Abaddon, the fierce first captain with tactical brilliance and legendary temper. Tarek Torgadon, whose humor masks a strategic mind. Horus Aximund, called Little Horus for his resemblance to the Primarch. And Garviel Loken, the newest member, whose thoughtful nature brings fresh perspective. "In the Mournival, we are equals. There is no rank," Abaddon tells Loken during his induction. Their ceremonies involve standing in sacred pools beneath Luna's light, forming a circle reflecting the four moon phases and reciting predecessors' names. This brotherhood exists within an organization built on absolute authority, serving as a forum where honest counsel can be given freely. When Loken voices concerns about military actions, his perspective is valued. Their heated debates strengthen rather than weaken their bonds, making their eventual fall during the heresy all the more tragic, showing how even the strongest bonds can shatter under pressure. On 6319, the Imperial Truth faces its first major challenge. After the main campaign, Loken leads his company against insurgents in the Whisperheads Mountains, where strange shrines unsettle the rational Astartes. The impossible occurs when Space Marine Jubal turns on his brothers, killing fellow Astartes while claiming to be Samus, a local deity. After Loken kills him, Jubal's corpse transforms horrifically, his armor splitting to reveal swollen limbs and hook-like claws. This incident fractures core beliefs. Space Marines should be incorruptible, yet something overrode Jubal's enhanced loyalty. When confronted, Horus offers a scientific explanation. These demons are merely warp entities from another dimension. But the explanation rings hollow. If these entities can possess Astartes and transform their bodies, doesn't that challenge the boundary between science and supernatural? This creates a profound question. What happens when a society founded on rigid rationalism encounters phenomena that defy explanation? The expedition faces 140-20, nicknamed Murder, after Blood Angel's Captain Frome's final words. This hostile world, with towering grass and deadly mega-arachnids, becomes a crucible for inter-legion relationships. The mega-arachnids, 3-meter-tall spider-like creatures with integrated armor and natural weapons, attack relentlessly without fear or self-preservation instinct. When Emperor's Children forces under Lord Commander Eidolon launch a premature rescue attempt, they suffer heavy losses, highlighting fundamental Legion differences. Glory-seeking perfectionist Emperor's Children versus efficiency-focused Luna Wolves. Captain Torgadon confronts Eidolon directly, criticizing tactics that decimated half a company of Astartes. The six-month campaign showcases Primarchs fighting together. Sanguinius and Horus battle side by side in what should have become legendary engagements, exemplifying the Imperium's ideal, diverse legions united in purpose, their strengths complementing each other. The campaign reflects how competition and cooperation coexist. The legions compete for glory while supporting each other against a common threat, mirroring our own social dynamics. The Interrex encounter reveals an alternative path for humanity, a sophisticated society that's successfully integrated with alien species like the Kynabrak while avoiding the corrupting influence of chaos. Their first meeting breeds misunderstandings. The Interrex are wary of the title War Master, suggesting possible chaos corruption, while Imperial officers like Abaddon are outraged by cooperation with Xenos species, seeing it as violating Imperial doctrine. Horus sees potential in this approach. When Abaddon insists on following the Emperor's anti-alien edicts, Horus counters that as War Master, he must interpret policy according to circumstances. The Crusade's once necessary ruthlessness now requires adaptation. The Interrex describe chaos as a malevolent force from the Immaterium that corrupts from within. Commander Tull is shocked by the Astartes' ignorance of such a fundamental threat, revealing a critical blind spot in Imperial knowledge. Tragically, this potential alliance collapses when the Anathema is stolen, triggering conflict. As Horus Rising concludes, subtle developments foreshadow the coming tragedy. Horus renames the Luna Wolves as the Sons of Horus, a change representing a shift in loyalty from the Emperor to himself. Meanwhile, Erebus examines the stolen Anathema, a strange blade with a rippled edge that glitters like diamond. The expedition prepares to rendezvous with another fleet before heading to settle a minor dispute, at Erebus's request, on a moon in the Davin system. This seemingly insignificant detour will become the pivot point of galactic history. What makes these developments chilling is their subtlety. No grand betrayal has occurred, just small shifts in loyalty that will eventually lead to catastrophe. The tragedy of Horus's fall lies in how gradual and reasonable each step appears. We see Horus's frustration with bureaucracy, concern about taxation, and desire for peaceful solutions. Not the thoughts of a villain, but of a leader navigating complex challenges, illustrating how good intentions can lead down unintended paths. Remembrancers, artists, historians, and poets documenting the Great Crusade provide a crucial human perspective amid superhuman conflicts. Mersadi Oleton, a historian bonded with Loken, encourages him to share feelings alongside observations, explaining that emotional context connects future generations to history. Euphrati Keeler, a photographer who witnesses horror in the Whisperheads, turns to the forbidden emperor worship of the Lectitio Divinitatis for comfort. Her shrine represents humanity's spiritual needs that the imperial truth fails to satisfy. Idnis Carcassi, a poet documenting compliance's darker sides, serves as the expedition's conscience. His drunken walk through the conquered high city reveals walls covered in defiant graffiti, evidence of imperial conquest's human cost. The remembrancers highlight the tension between sanitized narratives and conquest's messy reality. Their mission ironically documents the very events that will shape the future they serve. Horus Rising leaves us wondering what might have been had the Emperor addressed the warp's dangers, had the Interrex Alliance succeeded, or had the Imperial Truth accommodated humanity's spiritual needs.